Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2870. That's 2870. Tonight we're going to have a special guest on, and he's from the UK. Okay, and his name is Peter Daugherty. Is that, how do you say your last name?
Oh, Daugherty. Daugherty.
Daugherty. I can't say it quite the same way you do. Daugherty. Say it. There you go. That's not too bad. Anyway, he's from the UK, and he grew up in a spiritual family and became an altar boy. Now, I'm Carol Levine. I'm vice president of NASCOM. And I do most Wednesdays and Fridays and sometimes in betweens and some Thursdays and Tuesdays. You just never know when I'm going to be on. But tonight, this is a special guest, and I love it when the men come on, okay, because so often the men don't get what they deserve as far as, you know, information that it's okay to feel. It's okay to be confused. It's okay. All the things, you know, men are supposed to be macho. They're not supposed to talk about, you know, what happened to them and so forth. They're supposed to just suck it up, as we say here in the States. What NASCA does is we take care of the adults of childhood abuse, you know, things like that, but we also fight for the rights of children. And, you know, we do an awful lot of things here. And everyone that's listening, I want you to, you know, at times look at the mission statement. And also, too, I think it's very good if you get to know our website, because our website is chock full of information. And that's very, very important. And so I'm not going to take much time here because he's got quite a story to tell. And, you know, people who know NASCA certainly know what we do. And those of you who don't know NASCA, you're going to find out what we do. So there you go. Let me ask you something. Peter, I have read your bio. Okay, I've read your bio. And it's quite a bio, and I understand, you know what, you're not alone. We have a lot of people that do come on who have been abused, you know, in the same way that you have. Now, I don't want to read your bio and tell, you know, people your story. I want you to tell it your way and know that you're with survivors. We're all survivors here, okay? It's as simple as that. And there isn't anything we haven't seen. Unfortunately, there isn't anything probably we haven't done and so forth and so on. So I just want you to know that you're amongst family, okay? You're amongst family here. And once you tell your story, you are a family member, okay? So that's what happens. So go ahead and start telling your story. Go ahead. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay, so thanks. So my story starts really as an altar boy, I suppose. You know, my father, Irish Catholic, Irish Roman Catholic, brought up very much in church environment, quite a spiritual boy myself. Became an altar boy around about the age of 7, 8, something like that. The master of ceremonies in the church was a war veteran, World War II veteran from Burma. Fought, not from Burma, but had fought in the Burma campaign. very well respected member of the church, single male, well looked after by everybody. And he just piled up to everybody that I could see. So around about the age of 10, I think it was, 10 or maybe 9 or 10, started piling up with me around his house and started to help out at the house. And probably over the next couple of months, things started to turn a bit strange, I might say. But at the time, I when you know something's not quite right, even as a child, you just go with it because, you know, they're the adult. And, it was the summer and started, I'll take your shirt off and we'll do some sunbathing and that. Yeah, okay. Really thought, okay, yeah, fine. The next thing was it started getting too close, in many ways, getting on top of me and all that. But, things led to things. And as you probably guess what happens, from there. But that was once. And then I thought, I went home and my mum could tell that there was, something wrong. And she said, "Has he touched you?" And I said, "No." Because I was frightened. I was frightened that, if I said yes, then my whole world would essentially come to pieces, and I'd be the downfall of this guy who was well respected in the community, and also I might get locked up. I might get taken away from my parents. I was very frightened of that, and I was very frightened of, breaking my family up in many ways, and, breaking the church up and all that kind of thing. So I kept it to myself over the years. And, as the years went by, and I thought that, I'll just tell him not to do it. So sure enough, the next couple of days I said, "Oh, I don't like any of this, kissing stuff or anything like this, this love stuff," I said to him. Mm-hmm. He went, "Oh, right, okay, fine." And sure enough, he didn't do anything again to me. And I thought, "Oh, that's it then. Maybe I've stopped him from doing it." But it turns out a few years later, well, a lot of years later actually, but he'd done it. He'd continued to do it, and but the parents of this child who he'd done it to had actually found out, and he went to jail in the end. He went to prison. I bumped into him one day in the street when I was about, must have been about 27, 28, something like that. And I sat down on the bench next to him. By this time, he was gone. He'd gone pretty much blind. He was very, very much partially sighted, white stick, and very much the frail old man kind of thing. And he just said to me, he didn't even acknowledge that he'd done it to me, but he just said, "Oh, it was all a misunderstanding." And in his mind, to me, he thought he was, doing something natural to him, but it was just completely not natural to me. But so as the years went by, and you can probably tell from the way I'm speaking, I'm still even confused about it even now. But I've probably explained, it's my birthday today, actually. I'm 55 today, and this was happening 45 years ago, and I still remember it as fresh as anything. But as I was growing up as a teenager, you can imagine all sorts of confusion. Am I gay? Am I straight? Am I gay? I didn't realize there was many other different types of gender as well. But, as far as I'm concerned and my church was concerned, I was straight. And I still am in many ways, even though, you still feel as though there's always that crossover in many different ways, but it certainly led to a massive amount of confusion as I got older. Certainly led to, I had a lot of girlfriends, but I never stuck with them. I couldn't stick with anybody getting close to me. I was probably, as I grew up, grew older, I failed all my exams. I just couldn't settle down in myself. I couldn't focus on anything. I think we all know that nowadays is PTSD, but of course it, in the 70s and that it never existed really, I suppose. But and then as I got older at school, I would replace words in biology with sexually explicit words. So say they were talking about reproduction, then I would replace all those words with sexually explicit words, and I got into trouble for it. But and there was indicators there, you know, and when I look back on it, there were clear indicators that I had been abused, and none of the teachers picked up on it, not one. And you know, it was a religious school again, it was a Catholic school and I went to, and in many ways I think that actually stopped them from really looking outside of the shell and thinking that anything could happen. Sorry, I'll just have a drink there. But and then as I got older, I joined the military. And in the military, I was probably known as somebody who wasn't really that approachable. Somebody who was kind of a little bit, maybe, loose in terms of maybe sanity, I suppose. You know, I was always a bit kind of unapproachable, I suppose, in many ways. I always found it difficult to make friends.
Let me stop you for a second there, okay? Because what we do here on this show, I think I mentioned that in the email that I sent you, but at times we stop and we discuss things. Hey, take a drink of water or something, relax, you know. You're doing fine. Yeah. And you know, first of all, you didn't have anyone to tell you that what happened to you was, you know, abuse.
No one.
You know what I'm saying?
No.
If a child, if a kid is at the age of 9 or 10 or 11, whatever, and you're an altar boy, I'm Catholic too, okay? And then now I look back and I'm thinking about, geez, how many of those kids, you know, did I know that, you know, that were abused? Because I have news for you. With the pedophiles, and that's what they are when they're, when they're touching children, when they're assaulting children. I call it crimes against children because that's what it is.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So when they're doing this stuff, and then finally they got caught, they have found out that many times, I just want you to know this for your own information, okay, because he was never caught before, I don't think, this priest that had assaulted you. No.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. They do know, I mean, this is one thing they agree on, all of them, okay, is that, the first time doesn't mean that there's only one person. Many times there's 100 up to 128 assaults, and that can be with 10 kids one time, 5 kids another time, you know what I'm saying? And do the math yourself. It doesn't matter. So let me ask you something. How much prison time did this man receive? Do you know?
I think it was about 6 weeks or something like that. It wasn't a lot.
Oh, Lord Jesus, I'm going to go throw up somewhere. That makes me mad. Okay.
I don't think it was time that this guy got at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, let's think back for a second. You know, in those days, we looked at the priests and the nuns as if they were like godly saints, okay? That's what we looked at them like. They could do no wrong. And when you come from, I came from an atheistic family. I happened to become Catholic, okay? And that was on the other side of the family. And I went for instructions and I got baptized and so forth. But the point of the whole thing is that when you come from a very strict Catholic home, they have a certain mindset, you know, the parents. And in those days, again, they didn't think of them ever possibly doing something like that because they were like God. They were godly.
This guy wasn't a priest, but he was the next best thing to being a priest. He was the master of ceremonies, so you know he was like number two I see on the altar, you know. And this is the interesting thing, because like while my dad was very deeply religious and still is today, my mother wasn't. My mother was Protestant. My dad was Catholic. And my dad was from Ireland. My mum was from England. And you know, there was all that divide thing going on from where my dad had come from over Protestants and Catholics in the mix as well. So I tended to follow, well, as all eldest sons do. You know, you follow your dad, don't you? You know, you follow your father's kind of lead. So, and it was a difficult and lonely path, you know, to be on.
Of course.
Very lonely. You just couldn't make head. Well, I couldn't make head nor sails. I couldn't make sense of it. I really couldn't make sense of it for years and years. At all. Carried it with me. And it wasn't until I was getting much older and I'd managed to get away from home. I think it was about 24, 25 when I started disclosing to, you know, like girlfriends of friends. And you know, I felt safe there, safe enough to disclose. But it started there. That's kind of where my path to healing started, really. But very, very slowly. And it's taken, you know, even till today, really. And my father still doesn't know now. So my uncle knows.
Bless you.
And he went to pieces, absolute pieces, when I told him, his wife, my auntie. Yeah.
So you had certain people that knew about it and other people that didn't know. Yeah. Let me get Michelle on here. Hold on a second. Yeah. Let me get Michelle on. I know she's going to want to say hello to you. Okay, this is Michelle. Bless. Michelle, go ahead and say hello to Peter. Welcome to him to the show. And you might have a question or something. Go ahead.
Well, I first want to do say welcome to the show. And second, happy birthday. And I want you to know that your story, he said today was his birthday.
Wow.
I heard that. Yeah. So I'm so glad that you're here. Some of the stuff that you were sharing, it is not surprising to hear, because I am a survivor of sexual child abuse and domestic violence. I did not, I was not in a Catholic church, you know, and was messed with by a Catholic priest, but I was messed with by a pastor of a non-denominational church in my adult year, young year, up as an adult. But you are telling your story very well. There's a lot of people that is online listening, just so you know, but just know that you're not alone. I'm not sure if this is your first time sharing your story, but if it is, I am so proud of you, because this is a healing process. For me, when I started writing, I'm going to say this real quick, I started writing as a little girl, and by the time I became an adult and turned my life around and I was in this journey, I didn't realize that the things that I wrote was going to end up being a book. But it, you know, and writing it is a healing process for me. And when I share it, it's still a healing process, because it's going to help someone else. So good for you. And I'm looking forward to hearing more of your story. So thank you again for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
I was, I'm really, really glad to hear that. Thank you, Michelle. It's, that's massive for me, thank you. But, this is literally my first time sharing this story.
Okay.
apart from in therapy, where I trained to be a psychotherapist much later in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a massive help, in terms of the personal therapy, but also B, in terms of coming to understand and then looking at all the different areas. I went to a seminar on sex abuse run by, I think it was Dr. Glyn Hudson Alley in the UK. And that helped as well, you know, in terms of the trauma. And anybody's trauma, is coming to understand why things I did, as a, you know, some of the reckless things that I did, and you know, all the things in terms of forgiving myself for, you know, not achieving really. You know, my mum said when I didn't achieve any of my exams. My mum said, "Oh, we're very disappointed in you," and that it didn't hurt, but I knew why I didn't achieve them, and at the same time, but I couldn't tell her. I was protecting her, or I thought I was protecting her. And it did lead to a rift, maybe, between us, and unfortunately she passed away a few years ago, and she had her own demons, I think, a lot of time. And where they say trauma passes on from generation to generation, I think that's correct in many ways. And I got to understand why I was targeted, I think, because these paedophiles, they look for easy targets. They look for, they have a profile, don't they? A lot of them have a profile of what they look for in terms of age grouping, or, you know, and then how easy it is to get people in, and are they likely to say anything afterwards? And I think I probably fell into that target group quite well. You know, I was very innocent. I think when I look back at some of my photos of First Holy Communion, I was probably pretty angelic at the time and totally naive in everything. So, you know, it was, hey, here comes target number one. So, but part of that process is to, you know, write back, if there's something that you could write back to yourself and tell that person when you're that age that, you know, things are going to be okay in the future. But equally, a friend of mine who I met, I work for an oil company, and a friend of mine who I met, a Canadian friend of mine, I won't mention his name, but he disclosed it. It's funny. Do you ever find this, that you can talk without even knowing, you can talk and relate to somebody who's had abuse in the past without even, there's like some sort of, you know, not radar, but some sort of kinship that you have even before they disclose. And this one chap who I was talking to, he disclosed to me that he'd been abused, but his had taken a slightly different path from mine, whereas I'd never told anybody and I kept it all trapped. And he told his mother, the guy went to jail for it, and he became, I'd say, a much more forthright, excuse me, a much more forthright person. Whereas I, throughout my life, I kind of rolled over to, I probably accepted a lot of poor relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kind of, you know, being on the poor side of something, rather than actually saying, standing up and saying no. I kind of accepted that as just being, oh, you know, it's me, rather than it's actually them, and I have a right to say no. I have a right to say, hang on a minute, you know, it's not, you know, you're doing something wrong here, and correcting people on that. And it's only now in later life I'm able to do that. And that's why I'm here now as well, because I think if I can share where I came from and what was going on for me, and how long it took me to start getting over it, then
well,
maybe...
Let me say something to you here. Now, I hear you're having a little hard time talking.
I've got a cold, actually, so it's just a dry throat.
But I just want to mention something then, too. You never know how old you're going to be, you know, when you tell your story, okay?
No.
But it
right,
seems
yeah.
like most people are, you know, from 30 up. Now, I was young. That was young. Actually, 30 is considered young, you know, to tell your story, because usually people don't wait until they're around 50 or something, you know, around that time. So,
yeah.
you know... You're right in line. I don't know how old you are, but I'm just letting you know that, you know, we speak about prevention, intervention, and recovery on this show. This is what we speak about. And for God's sake, we have to teach parents to talk to their children so that if they do get abused, you know, that they can easily come to them and tell them the truth and they will be believed. You see, this is what happens so often, okay, Peter, is that the kids don't feel safe in telling their parents. And, so that one friend that you had that you were talking about a few minutes ago, you know, he was able to talk to his mother, and he felt comfortable enough to do that. And so, therefore, you know, the guy went away for 6 weeks. Oh, that makes me mad.
Yeah, no, the other guy, the guy that did him went away for 2 years, I think. And this is interesting. Well, I'm in my 50s now. I'm in my mid-50s now. I'm 55. It does. Because growing up as a child in the 70s, you bring that that mindset of the 70s. In the UK recently, you know, we've had a lot of big celebrities from the 70s been convicted of paedophilia. And it used to be, I remember my mum saying to me when I was a child that essentially anybody in a position of power in the country got away with anything in the 70s and mm-hmm. nobody ever talked about it. So there was an MP called Cyril Smith in the UK, and he was a really big guy, but when he died, it turned out that he'd been visiting boys' homes, orphanages with just boys in them, and then having sex with them. That made the news. The Jimmy Savile, era. Everybody thought he was a hero. Turns out, no, he wasn't. He was quite totally the reverse. So, you know, in my books, I often, and I'm not sure if it's the same for you guys either, but I find it very difficult to trust people, anybody in a position of authority. And,
mm-hmm.
And for years, I found it very difficult to be in a room on my own with anybody who was male. In a position of authority. I always found it difficult to be in that situation because I wasn't sure whether they wanted to have sex with me or just actually, and I wasn't sure what a normal relationship was, to be honest. I wasn't sure what a normal male-to-male relationship was because I hadn't had that trust had been broken at that early age by somebody who I thought was a really good role model, and it turns out that they weren't, you know, and that betrayal was immense for me. Found it very difficult, very difficult.
Well, that's common. You're saying a lot of things here. What you're talking about is very common because you had this experience, the crimes against children experience against you, and then you don't know how you what a real genuine relationship is like with a guy, because now you have a certain fear. After all, you were attacked by a guy, all right? And then you started questioning your sexuality. Yeah.
His first interaction with a guy was sexual. And
right.
So to a male child, first of all, being a male child, you don't even know anything about sex, okay? And then to meet a man, which you know you're a boy, but you know you're going to be a man. He's just like you. And it's like he's coming at you sexually. And so that automatically not only confused you, I'm sure it was painful, and it just shut you down. So you didn't know no other interaction but that with a man. So, of course, that is absolutely understandable. And please know that. Please know that that's not – I don't want you to feel, well, hey, you know, I need to work on stop being this way because I don't want to be weird. No, that's natural.
Yeah.
That is natural, just so you know. Yes,
right.
Absolutely, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
And
you see, there's nothing
that might
wrong
not ever
with you,
go
Peter.
Away.
Yeah,
all.
There's
nothing
wrong with you, Peter. Okay, there's
mm-hmm.
nothing wrong with you. You were a child.
Mm-hmm.
You were a child. And at that time you were a victim. Okay, you're a survivor today because you're still standing. I always put that in there because people don't realize that they think of themselves many times only as victims. You have to realize you're still alive. You're still walking the ground, so you're a survivor. You survived it. But question your sexuality.
We were kids, though. We were kids, Carol.
Well,
our innocence was taken away. People got to understand who never experienced this. Our innocence was taken away. So we were, you know, so I mean, I've been on my healing process, Peter, for like, oh, my God, over 30 years, and I still get those moments. And then I tell myself it's okay because when I was at Michelle and I looked for an adult to protect me, to love me, to hug me, to teach me, instead what I got was molestation, rape, beatings, you know? And so now being an adult, oh, and one more thing, and I was always told to be quiet, don't talk about it, shut up. But now who I am today, I protect that little person inside me, you know? And it's okay if I get those moments because I was a victim. But today I'm a survivor. So just know that. Just know that, my brother. Just know that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you something. Did he ever threaten you? You know, like a lot of times, Michelle kind of jolted something in my brain here. But were you ever threatened, you know, that this is our secret, or if you tell, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, whatever?
No. Or used to have, so every time I did something good, he would put £1, £1, $1 in a jar. So it was more of a, you know.
Yeah.
So when he was doing that stuff to you, he was giving you money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But he wouldn't give it to me. He'd put it in a jar. So it's in a jar, kitchen. And he is. And I think that's why. Why my mum asked. Why my mother asked. Mm-hmm. Is he touching you? And I said no, you know, it was, it is.
It's very hard to get over, you know, being sexually abused, okay? I want you to understand that. There's no magic pill. There's no magic pill. And I've seen many, many people who were sexually abused and who questioned their own sexuality because it was by the same sex, okay? This is all very common, you know, that that people, you know, go through this. But you were lucky enough, all right, you sabotaged relationships. That's what you did. When you were in school, you'd go out with the girls and the relationships wouldn't last that long because you didn't want them to get too close. And, And but you didn't really want anyone to get too close, and that's why when you went into the service, that's why you were like a loner. You were like someone who was, like you said, unapproachable because you had all of these conflicts in your brain about yourself, your own sexuality, your own being, your own worth. When we're terribly abused like that, we think we're worthless. And then on top of it all, you failed, you know, in school. So then your mother made you feel even worse by, you know, not meaning, I'm not saying she did it on purpose, don't get me wrong, but you know that she, you know that she was disappointed. And it's like one thing after another, you know, of your mind having to absorb, you know, all the things that happened to you. And so what you're going through is completely and totally normal, you know. And that's what a lot of us go through. A lot of us go through this, you know. But I, you know what? You're a trooper. You're a trooper. All right. Whether it be the first time or the third time that you're telling your story, the point is you're able to tell your story and you're doing it. Yeah. And there's men listening right now. And I like that because we're trying to have more men come forward, Peter. You know, you can tell men that you know of, you know, about our show here and have them look at our website, naasca.org, nasca.org, and so that they can learn, so that they don't walk around feeling the same way that you were so confused, so, you know, years ago, and even a little bit to this day. Do you have a therapist now that you see, or your wife you feel is your rock? I read that. Your wife is your rock. But do you seek counsel or what?
Not anymore, but I haven't done for about 5 years.
Okay.
It's about it's finding the trust. It's finding one you can trust. because it's no doubt, no, not all therapists are the same. And with me, I'm now a qualified humanistic existential psychotherapist. But even being a psychotherapist, you still need therapy because you need to undo your own stuff and pick out your own stuff before you can, you know, be safe with clients and client work. So I haven't counseled for a couple of years now. I kind of fell out of it when I moved, and then I moved back. So I'm getting back into it. So it is certainly one thing that is on my radar to start again, because in many ways, you know, particularly with the lockdowns and everything like that, you know, it does tend to impact on people.
Yes, it absolutely does. It says here.
Let me say something real quick, Carol, before you go.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
I want to say something to Peter.
Go ahead.
I'm a counselor, okay, and I have 5 patients. I've been in therapy for me since the year 2000. Best thing I ever did. Still have a therapist. I still have a therapist, a psychiatrist. Yes, I do. And because you have to have an outlet.
Yes.
We as counselors, we helping others, but don't forget the counselor. You got to have help too. And
yeah,
you know
that's
what's
right.
So interesting, Peter. I used to say long time ago. This is before I got any healing, before I turned my life over to God or anything. I used to hear people say, "Oh, I got a therapist." I'm like, "What? Are you crazy? Who? A therapist? I don't need no therapist today."
Oh.
And I always tell people that story. Yes, it's very important. There's nothing wrong with having a therapist or a counselor or a psychiatrist. It doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with you. It is a place of safety, a place where you can build trust, and you'll be able to let out all those things that we held inside us.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, that's very true. Yeah, that's very true. And I just want to tell you something because I think at first I laughed, okay? Sometimes you learn things as you go along, don't you? But I have worked at psychiatric facilities. I worked at Greystone. I was a technician there, state certified. I worked with the psychiatrists. All right, I was right under them, right there. And they all had psychiatrists. So when I first started, when I found that out, I remember laughing. Well, here's a psychiatrist who has a psychiatrist. And they all had psychiatrists.
Yeah,
so you see, they would do their job at this state hospital that I worked at, but they needed help too. And a lot of times maybe it was because they felt like they were burning out and things like that. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But there's nothing wrong with having help, for God's sake, because you know what happens? If you get the help, and like Michelle said, you have a place where you can speak openly, freely, no one's expecting anything from you, and all this other stuff, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, because then you can go back to work refreshed, you know, you go back and do what you do even better. So that's true. Now it says here, it's true.
Sorry, my wife always notices the difference. When I'd been to do therapy and then come out of it, I was a much lighter person. So
yes,
I was easier to get on with, you know. So.
That's right. Yeah, otherwise you're all pent up. I mean, you have to, like Michelle did say, you have to have some place to, like, let it all go. You know, you simply do. But I want to get back here to your bio. It says at school you got into trouble also. And although I could get girlfriends, I would push them away. At that part, we were covered, but not the school part. So did they sort of like consider you to be delinquent many times?
I was intelligent enough to hide it and intelligent enough to, how should I say, it was almost like I'd you know, intellectually it was there, everything was there, but in terms of growing up inside of myself, and it was like something Michelle said earlier, those years had been robbed from me, that innocence had been taken away, and I think I was always striving to get that back, and I think that I wasn't able to commit to anything, and I was underachieving, and it was a classic underachieving constantly, and in an anger, I was always angry inside myself, and I couldn't work out why. Constantly angry, and it was difficult to be with myself. In a lot of times, it was like I used to go for walks. I used to tell my dad this, and my dad didn't even know I did this. I used to leave the house at 3 o'clock in the morning, or 2 o'clock in the morning, and just go for a walk around the town because it was quiet. About 2 hours walking around the town, and I'd be back by 5 a.m. and back in the house. nobody was ever the wiser, but I needed that inner peace. I think I was trying to get. I just so confused within myself, and in the end, as I said, I failed all my exams because I was still tied up within myself. I think in many cases, so classic underachiever.
You said something that was key. You said you were trying to get that time back that was stolen.
Because I just
lit up. You can't see me, but I just lit up when you said that because I went through that same wilderness. I went through that season that I was trying to get back my childhood. I was trying to get back all those things. And because I was trying, Peter, everything else without me realizing was failing.
Exactly right.
I was stuck. I tell people, wherever you got raped and molested at, your body might grow into an adult, but our mind is stuck at that time.
It is.
Yeah.
Definitely something that. And it manifests itself in me. It manifested as juvenile behavior.
Mm-hmm.
As a 15-year-old, I was probably behaving more like a 12-year-old. In many ways, but even into my 20s, I was still behaving like I was 15, probably. You know, it was like I was paused in time. With a gap in the middle of my own history. It was most odd. And for years, I couldn't remember what had happened. And it was only until I went into therapy as part of training for counseling that I started to unpick it and realize why those years were missing.
But you see, that's normal, too. You see, Peter, you have to know certain things. It's been, all the studies show that at certain times in our life, we get stuck. No one knows how old I am because I act so young. Maybe I'm stuck in that time frame. I don't know. I'm trying to get my childhood back because, you know, I'm not in my second childhood yet. No, I'm not. But, you know.
You are an adult now. But you find yourself acting like that little girl or that little boy.
I did that for so many years. Yes.
And one time a lady said to me, she said, stop acting like a kid and grow up. And I shut down. Mm-hmm. And when I went home, I was crying and everything started flooding back to me. It was like, mm-hmm. Well, how can I grow up? And my innocence was taken. I'm stuck where mm-hmm. that little girl was.
Right.
So that's
exactly.
When I went
right.
down to therapy. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah. You still have to have that. You almost have to have that nurturing side for that little child that's stuck there,
mm-hmm.
and,
yes.
and that hasn't grown. And you got to protect that. You know, you've got to tell them that it's okay. You know, it's okay. You're okay to grow up now. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that, and it is that part of the brain, isn't it, that remembers that. Get yourself stuck in those places. Definitely.
There are many people who are stuck, Peter, even to this day, okay? And they're trying very hard to get out of that stuck feeling. And we try to, we try to encourage them with things to do, exercises, give them tools. We do this on NASCA. And, we have all kinds of articles on NASCA to teach you how to move forward. But, you know, we never get over. I don't care if you live to be 100, okay? There's always going to be a time when you look back. And you see, I'm almost 100. I'm almost there. Not really. But I feel like I am some days. But anyway, but if I lived to be 100, if I did, I'm just saying, if I lived to be 100, I'd still probably look back to certain times in my life. I would. Because that's what you do. You know why? Because it happened. It happened. We can't help that it happened. But what we can help is how we, you know, handle, you know, the situation mentally by knowing it was never our fault. We were just kids giving ourselves self-talk that is positive. And look at where I am today. If I'm stuck, I want to move forward. And how do you move forward? You make little goals for yourself. And don't make big goals because you might crash. I noticed here that you said you went through a time where you were drinking a lot, but you don't feel like you're an alcoholic or anything. You're using that as a crutch. Is that what you think?
Well, being in the military as well, you tend to drink a lot anyway. But and there is always that danger, you know, where you could, and I'm aware of that. I'm aware of, you know, that I think at one time I wasn't aware of my limitations with alcohol in many ways. Never took drugs, ever. But alcohol was, you know, it took. And it's almost like that search for spirituality again, isn't it? I mean, is the interesting. Even with Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a spiritual side to it. And giving up to the it's the search for spirituality, and in many ways, getting drunk, I suppose, to me was that finding inner peace, actually, in many ways. And it wasn't until afterwards, and therapy and things like that, that I realized that I didn't need to drink any to achieve that inner peace. And even now, although I like to drink, I don't drink as much as what I used to drink. Now that might just come with age, but I think that in many ways that people I can see how people can get down a track where you can end up just drinking and drinking and drinking, and then eventually you become addicted to it in terms of your body needs it to function in many ways, you know, on a daily basis. But I never got to that situation. I always managed to stop myself. And I think that might be from that, you know, that inner strength that I had as a child of saying no and not now, and keeping all that to myself has taught me that that ability to actually realize when, you know, things are going a bit too far now. And now what I do is I'm an advocate now for I'm like radar for watching out for signs of anybody, you know, abusing people or being abused. Almost like a radar with me, if that makes sense. I'm very much an advocate for watching out for people and making sure that kids are safe, making sure that, you know, I have two daughters myself, two great teenage daughters, and their outlook on life is fabulous, absolutely fabulous. They really know how to keep themselves safe, and I just hope that I've furnished them with enough knowledge and enough inner strength that they can, you know, be successful in their lives, and not have the situation happen to them that you know, that happened to me.
Well, that's why we tell our stories. You know, that's why you're here tonight. You know, we have an awful lot of people that listen to NASCA, sometimes more that often than not or whatever. And a lot of times people look to see who's on. And again, because you're a man, okay, that makes them more apt to want to listen. And you can be sure that there's a lot of guys out there that, you know, have been, you know, touched, abused one way or another, you know, and sexually abused, and they keep it inside. And they're the ones you're going to find down in the bar, okay, at the end of the bar there, and he's drinking and drinking and drinking, and what does he do? He goes home, and he takes it out on his family. So often that happens. You know, that's where the children come in. Yeah, he hits his, beats his wife, and then the kids, they run around all over the place trying to hide or something. I know. I came from that. So, you know, I was always afraid that I was going to get hit. My so-called father never did hit me, but I was always afraid he was going to hit me. And I saw what he did to my mother, okay? And they would send my brother and I upstairs, and it would continue this terrible battling. And when we were upstairs, that's when it really got bad. And what they didn't realize is that I was sneaking downstairs still watching. They didn't know I was watching until the very last day when, you know, little girls, they like to play with pots and pans, right? And there was this one pan that I didn't like to play with because it was too heavy. It wasn't fun to play with. And, of course, that's the black skillets. And we know all, you know, those heavy black skillets they fry in. And I knew that if you hit her in the head with that, that he'd kill her.
Yeah.
And that's when I screamed, "No, Daddy, no." And then he spun around and he stormed down the hallway. He picked me up. And he smashed me against the staircase. And I felt every bone in my back. And then he dropped me like a rag doll. And he left. And as he left, he slammed the door so hard that the glass in the door just broke and shattered all over the place, and I was like huddling trying to cover myself so I wouldn't get hit by the glass. And then I went out into the kitchen, and there was my mother full of blood. So I got a rag, and I started to mop her face off. So you see, we all have our stories. And that's just a tiny bit of what happened to me. Michelle's a tiny, you know, a little tiny bit of what happened to her. Our stories are horrific. And we don't take yardsticks here. But some are worse than others. Let's put it that way. One guy told a story some time ago now, about 3 or 4 months ago, I think it was. And his was so bad that I was horrified. Me. You know, I was horrified. If I'm horrified, watch out. It's got to be really bad. So what we go through in our life, okay, we never know what we're going to go through. But children who come from abusive backgrounds, we do have terrible, terrible problems with all different kinds of things, relationships you mentioned, yes. We have sometimes, many times, I should say, people have trouble with their sexuality, especially if it's same-sex abuse, okay? I've had friends who were, you know, abused by family members, their brothers and sisters. I too was abused by a brother. And I didn't have trouble with my sexuality. I split. I took off. I went out in the streets. That's all. I was treated better there than I was at home. So, you know, we all have our stories. And the very fact that we made it through this lifetime that, no, we've been given to live, and we're able to tell our stories, and I didn't go to jail. I was an athlete, though. Maybe they couldn't catch me. A couple times I probably should have. I was pretty delinquent. They caught my friends. But, you know, the point is we do things, okay, and we don't even know why we're doing it. We have no guidance. Like Michelle had touched on before, we didn't have, you know, the people to guide us, to love us, to nurture us. That's what we use on NASCA, the word nurture. We didn't have that. And so we had to sort of, like, grow ourselves up. And for some reason, it is true, you know, it is true that at a certain age, and everybody's different, we sort of like get stuck at that age. And I think we do try to get our childhood back because it was robbed from us. So today I'm having fun with my children, my grandchildren, and I even have some great-grandchildren. Yes, I do. So that, I told them to calm that down. I said, you're getting old. That's what I tell him. But it's a wonderful thing that we've reached the ages that we are, okay? Now, I couldn't tell if you said if you're in your 50s or 60s. I'm 74, and I'm proud to be 74. I'm happy that I made it because you married well. I didn't marry well. I married twice poorly. The first time was the worst because that was the father of our children, and that was the worst. So you see, we make terrible mistakes in our life. Now, somewhere along the line, you met your wife, and you say that you call her she's your rock. And there's a lot of us that never found that. So in that sense, you're very fortunate. You're very fortunate because you have a spouse that you can, who understands you, who you can talk to, who's going to help you. And boy, you should treat her real good. You really should. You should treat her really well. Because, you know, these people, our people, our spouses, I can't say it in my case, but you can say it in your case, you know, that do understand and who are so supportive of your needs and who can, you know, back you and say all kinds of things to you and give you strength when you feel weak. And again, you're in the counseling area too, all right? But still in all, you have your time and you have your days where you need someone to talk to. And you can just talk to your wife. And your wife builds you back up again. And that's a good marriage.
And it's important to talk.
Yes, it is. That's
and be
a
honest.
Good marriage.
Yeah.
You bet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're all very proud of you. Proud of you in the sense that, you know, that you didn't turn to alcohol and drugs to the point where you ruined your life almost. I mean, I was at the point where if I didn't stop drinking, I would have died because my fingers swelled and my kidneys pounded. And I knew I had to stop. So I worked at detox. Me. Now, this should, you know, alcoholics have a way about them. I worked at detox, and I had to stay home 3 days to detox myself. But I never looked at myself as an alcoholic, Peter, because, quite frankly, I was a functioning alcoholic. I was able to take care of my children because I left my first husband, their father. I was able to take care of them. I was able to get up and go to work every day, and I did my job well. And I came home and I took care of my children well, but I was an alcoholic. So there's all kinds of things that you learn as you go along the way. And I did go to AA for a while. And then I decided that, you know, people make decisions, and I decided that I was going to be okay. And I was. I haven't had a drink since 1981. That's a long time. Yeah. But let me tell you something. When the summertime comes around, and people are having their barbecues, and I'm invited and all this other stuff, those cans of beer or those bottles of beer, they look awful good. So you see the difference. When you're an alcoholic, you want to drink. It's just that you know you can't. I can't even have one. Okay. So there's the difference. So you've told quite a story here. And I'm really glad that you told that story because, okay, it says you became a counselor and counseled many people with all sorts of hidden trauma. Well,
yeah.
Hidden trauma, that's, yes, that means they have trouble with their sexuality and all kinds of things because I've worked in the field. I know this stuff. And but it doesn't mean, I worked with a transgender once, and the doctor at the clinic that I worked at, he said, can't you do something with him? I thought, oh, boy. So, well, they were going to deny him his methadone unless he came into the clinic dressed as a man, which is what he was, a man. Okay? So we had many, many, many sessions, he and I. And by the time I left that clinic, that was some years later, he was going out with girls, and he liked girls. So you see, you have to, like, uncover, you know, the mask, the veil, what it is that actually makes people think, you know, that they have to be a certain way without going into specifics. I can't do that on air. But, you know, as a counselor, you do see many things. Now, you were, like, fading out on my phone. Why is it that you're not counseling now? I know you said it, but I couldn't quite hear it.
Oh, yeah. I had to go and work elsewhere, and that took me away for a time for about 7 years. So so I've moved back into my area now, and I'll probably restart now.
That's good.
As I'm stopped.
That's good.
Yeah.
We need all the counselors we can, you know, we can get out there because there's a lot of people that, you know, need a lot of help, especially in today's world that we're living in. And you know what we're living through. You know what we have over here in our country. And the other countries that are involved. I mean, this is horrific. It's almost like genocide for the Ukrainians. Think about how they feel.
Oh, I know.
Can't even
imagine. Oh, it's terrible,
isn't it? I can't even imagine it. And I'm a news buff, so I see it all, honey. Oh, yes, I do. And then I think, well, I'm going to take a day's break, and I will take a day's break, and then I'm right back there again. So I know everything that's going on, basically, of what we're going to know from the media, right? But when it comes to situations like with the sexual abuse, I mean, there's all kinds of abuses, which we mentioned. There's physical, mental, emotional. Okay.
Yes.
and sexual and neglect. Now, from what you told from your story, I'm not going to say your parents neglected you, because they didn't neglect you, not from what I could hear or see or read.
No.
But, no, I don't think they did either. Because times, again, were different back then. Peter, I wrote my book. Michelle's an author also. I wrote my book in 2010 for the second time. The first time they said it was too volatile. So the company dropped me. They gave me my money back. I didn't get stiffed, okay? So I wrote it again, and in 2010, there was only one other book like mine on Amazon. That's it. One. Now, if you look at Amazon today and look under, you know, child abuse, books on child abuse and all this other stuff, it's flooded. There are so many books out there. And it's good that there's so many books out there, because the books that are read are helping people. There's all kinds of ways to help people. And we talk about this on our shows. And counseling, of course, is one of them. But another, there are other ways, too. You can have them on the platform here. They can tell their stories. A lot of people blog. We have poets. We have people who write poetry. We have artists. You know, in presentations that I've done, I've used some of the paintings that they painted. I would say I would pay them, of course. I'd say I want you to, you know, draw a picture of a little girl who looks like she's terribly alone and scared and frightened outside of her house. And this artist captured that beautifully. And at one of the presentations I gave, the people were actually taking pictures of the pictures that the artist had made. So I thought that was really cool. I mean, they drew these pictures, and their pictures were, you know, being taken. You know, people were taking pictures of their pictures, of their artwork. So, again, there's the artist. There's just all different kinds of things and ways. And of course, there are other groups, you know. So there are so many things that are being brought out now. We know about the clergy abuse. We've known about it, you know, for some time. And what's so frustrating about this clergy abuse, whether it be Catholic, whether it be Protestant, Methodist, it doesn't matter what it is. Even the Jews, you Jewish people, they have problems too. And the ones that go door-to-door, what do you call them, Michelle, the ones that go door-to-door? Yeah, Jehovah's Witnesses. They have a way of covering it up the same way that the Catholic Church do. Oh, yes, they do.
Every religion had sexual abuse in it.
Look where it is. The Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, you know, camps, of course, the school systems. I mean, there are just so many, many pedophiles out there. It is disgusting.
Daycare.
And I think that, yes, they should take them, put them in jail, and leave them there, okay? Because, on Oprah, she had people on the show and that were, you know, child abusers and had gotten caught. They were pedophiles, and they'd gotten caught. And a couple of them had been castrated. And yeah, well, I want you to see that. If you can find that, you know, in the archives way back when.
Yeah, I think that.
You what?
I think that.
Oh.
I said I think
that. Well, let me finish what she said, all right? They ranged in ages, by the way, Peter, from 30, these guys, it was all men, from 30 to 60. In fact, the guy might have been 62. I don't know if he was 60 or 62. And not one of them, even the ones that were castrated, said that they were not safe around children. And they'd had counseling. And they had been in prison. And some of them were in prison for years. And still, it's like they can't be fixed. Too many studies for decades now. I looked it up, I know. For decades now, they've been doing studies about pedophilia. And they just simply don't have any pat answers. They just don't. So these guys out there, and women too.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't mentioned this in a while, but the Huffington Post, that's a newspaper over here, had teachers, they were using teachers, and they're all female teachers who were going after the young boys, and they had gotten caught, and they put their information, right there on the Huffington Post. They showed each picture, boom, 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 all the way down. And some of them were pretty, some weren't pretty, didn't matter. Some of them were very young, like just out of school almost, maybe a little bit older than that. And then there were those that were older still, okay? So it doesn't matter the age, and they got caught. So, no, there's more men that are pedophiles. However, they're finding that there's an awful lot of women, too. And I can't give you a number on that because I don't know it. I don't know if they quite know it yet.
Do you wonder why, if that is because, I know, men are more, it's more obvious and more well-known, and women maybe hide it better?
I think you have something there, because first of all, we always think as women as being nurturing, right? So for a long time, they weren't even looking at the women. And I have to say something. I'm Italian. I have Italian in me, so I can say this. But I saw this, and my friends were always Italian. I'd go to the houses, and there was this one guy who was, they were older than me, but he was like 14. I was like 12 or something. I don't know, whatever. And he had a crush on his teacher, female teacher, and she used it. She knew that he had a crush. And he said, my teacher gives me this, she gives me that, she gives me special privileges. And evidently she was hugging him in the hallway, things like that. It hadn't progressed past that with him, because she did get caught, okay? Like, she got suspended. There was no real talk about it. I don't know exactly what transpired. But the father of that young boy, who was 14 years old, maybe close to 15, but 14, he said, attaboy! And he gave him a slap on the back. He said, attaboy! No.
Yeah.
You see? So a lot of times with certain cultures, all right, they look at things differently. They do.
And cultures, religious background, even the society, or the country that you're in, or, the political system you're in or whatever. So it's all different. And we'll all look on it differently. I think, isn't it Japan where I think age of consent is 11 or something like that? And France in the last, 10, 15, 20 years or something like that has just changed their age of consent from 14 to 16 or something like that. I really recall that. So, it's... And as time progresses on, we realize the damage that this is doing to people as they grow up and how much of an impairment it puts on people's growth and their ability to be themselves or their ability to, as Rogers would say, self-actualize, because they're stuck in time. They haven't come to terms with that, and their brains aren't capable of understanding what has happened to them. So and it's only now as a civilized society, or we like to think we're civilized, that we're starting to come to terms with an understanding of what these things are doing to our children. And we're starting to move these ages of consent to protect them better, which is only the right
That's
way
right.
to go.
Well, you see, that's what we wanted so badly for this country, all right? And it should be for all countries. And Canada actually had it for a while. Now, I don't know if they still have this. But in school, they were teaching kids about, abuse, sexual abuse. What's appropriate, what's not appropriate, okay? And it was age appropriate also. It was done in such a way that it would, you know, wouldn't, it shouldn't have, you know, insulted the parents. Look, we don't live in an innocent world. So therefore, we have to teach our children. And, you know, if parents can't do it, by God, then it would be good if school systems could, you know, take over a part of that role. Have them work together. That's what PTA is for, right? Work together. So what they were doing, I know, in Canada, okay, and it did work for a while because we had a lady who was on our show, and she worked, I believe, sort of like as an aide, you know, going into the school and working with the teachers, say. And but she learned that they were teaching the children about, you know, watch out for the boogeyman, if you will, but you don't even call it the boogeyman, but the guy or the girl, the woman, who is going to touch you inappropriately. And again, it was age appropriately done, so it shouldn't have offended anyone. Mm-hmm. Now, I thought that was great. And they did it all the way up to the 12th grade. And in teenage years, they taught them, which is something Michelle and I were talking about the other night. We started talking about it. Relationships with teenagers. You see, when kids come from an abusive home, what happens is they don't know how to choose their partners either, do they? No, they don't. So, you know, and that's a bad thing. So, you know, to teach them what's right, what's wrong, what's good, what's bad, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I call it, okay? And then you have more educated children, and that's what we need. We need more educated children. And then just maybe that dent that I keep talking about in the statistics will improve. When I say improve, I mean they'll go down.
Yes, thank you.
And it has to start at home, though. So what happened, though, when we tried it in our country, there are a couple schools maybe that accepted it, but when we tried it in our country, and they had to send letters home to the parents to let them know that they were going to do this. So what happens? All of a sudden there's a big uproar in one school, then another school, then another school, then another school, and then nothing got done. And that's a shame.
There is the same thing here in the UK, I think, in certain schools. But the government stepped in and said, no, we're doing it, and that's it. So they do have that age-appropriate education. And it is. It's about saying to, you know, it's about saying to a child at whatever age that, you know, your body is your body. It's not anybody else's. And you have an entire right to protect yourself and actually tell somebody if something isn't right, if somebody's trying to take advantage of you. And, you know, I can't see the reasons other than some absolutely misguided apprehension that this is an incorrect thing to do. But I think it's a totally correct thing to do, is to furnish children with the information that they need to keep safe in this world.
Give them the right body part names. You know, often parents they giggle. That's so stupid. I'm going to put Bill on for a second here because I see that he said he was working, but his mic is open now. But I just want you to know, when you teach your children, I'll just say this quickly, and we talk about this on the show, when you teach your children, you say you have a head, you have shoulders, you have arms, you have a breast, you have breasts, you have a tummy, you have a vagina, you have legs, you have feet, and this is what God gave you. And if you don't change the tone, okay, then the kids don't consider their private parts, which is what people want to look at, or, you know, they're too embarrassed to call them by the names, proper names, you know, then they won't be embarrassed to come to you and say, hey, someone just touched my breasts and I didn't like that. Mm. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's really, really important. Let's put Bill on because he all of a sudden, I guess he's not working right this second. Bill, are you there?
I am there, and I wanted to make sure that I got an opportunity, Carol, to thank Peter for coming. You know, he's in the UK, so that's quite a distance. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning, I think, there when he started. So now
yeah,
it's almost
two thirty.
But Peter, you know, I also wanted to make a comment that your story and mine are very similar. Mine was a priest, and it kind of destroyed me. You know, it destroyed my faith. I couldn't do school. All the things that you did happened to me too. I had a lot of trouble with girls. I didn't know how to handle that. I also, I knew I wasn't gay. I didn't feel gay. You know, I mean, I wasn't ever attracted to a male. But it was very, very confusing is the point. So I appreciate your telling your story, and I congratulate you for doing it for the first time. You did a great job, by the way. Great job.
Thanks, Bill. It's good to talk to you.
And you shouldn't. Sorry?
It's good to talk to you as well, finally. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You come back anytime you want. Carol will tell you this as the show concludes, but... you're a member of the NASCA family now. I know it's hard when the show starts at 1 o'clock in the morning with you, but if you want to stay up and do it, you can join any show you want and be a panelist and talk with everybody else. It really makes a difference to feel like you're part of the community. It really does.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because for years you're on your own.
Yeah, we're delighted to have you here, and you're talking to
Absolutely.
The Night Owl. So I just want you to tell you something.
Yeah.
A lot of times up until 5, 6 o'clock in the morning talking to people, oh, yes, I am.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so if once in a while you want to, you know, pop in, and Michelle also, and so if once in a while you want to pop in, you know, you're more than welcome. You're a family member now. You belong to NASCA.
Thank you.
And we like you.
I like you a lot.
I'm so happy you're here. I'm so happy.
Mm-hmm.
And Michelle, he came here on his birthday. Yes, he did.
I know.
Oh, my
I
God.
Know.
That's something else. That's really nice.
All the fun.
Yeah. Oh. I think we should sing happy birthday to him. That's what I think.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Michelle.
I don't think so.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well,
happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, and many more.
You bet. To spend your birthday with us, I am just so flattered. Yes, I am.
I want to say quickly to Peter that we are, you know, my name, Michelle Bless, and Carol's, and I'm quite sure you have Bill's number, if not. We are on the website. They have a list of names. And I just want you to know that feel free, my number, you can call me anytime. We are family. I'm your sister. And, you know, anytime you want to talk, feel free to call.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you very much.
That's right.
You're welcome.
And so, you know what we do? Thank you for that, Michelle. And what we do is at the end of the show, we allow for you to have a couple minutes to give people hope. Okay. Is there something you'd like to say to the audience?
Yeah. Honestly, if you're stuck, reach out and talk to someone. Find someone you can trust. Find somebody who will take you seriously and give yourself time and forgive yourself. It is not your fault you're in this situation. It is somebody else's. And in a lot of cases, it is difficult to come to terms with that. And it's difficult to come to terms and try and comprehend that somebody has done this to you. But believe me, there is hope, there is light, there is the ability to bring yourself into the here and now and help yourself in terms of bringing yourself back on track and helping yourself grow and be a better person if you're having problems. But please just reach out. It is there. You can do this. and you can be all that you ever wanted to be. And thank you to Michelle and Carol and Bill. Thank you guys for listening and making me a part of it.
Well, we are delighted, okay. We're delighted you came on. And you are, like I said, you are a new family member now. And call in, you know, if you're walking around, you know, and you're restless or whatever, just call in and listen to a show, be a part of the panel if you want. And you're here, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
You're quite welcome. So our show's going to end probably what do we have here? I think we have about 3 minutes left yet. So
yeah.
I just want to say to everyone, this is a special show. And we when we say we're worldwide, we are worldwide. We've got people calling in from all different, you know, countries and from down under and all kinds of places. And one time it was Vietnam and
wow.
Just everywhere. You never know when they're going to call in or who's going to call in. But the stories are similar. Many of our stories are similar. And the feelings certainly are the same, okay? And just remember that it was never our fault. And put the shame where the shame belongs. Okay, get rid of your shame. Because you have nothing to be ashamed of, okay? That's just the way it is. You put that shame on the person or persons that abused you, whether it be sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, or neglected. All of those is what we talk about, you know, on this show. And remember our website, those of you who aren't NASCA people, who aren't, you know, who are new to listening. I handed out a lot of cards. There could be people listening tonight. But, you know, go to our website, our NASCA website, NAASCA.org, NASCA.org. And scroll down a little bit, and you'll see red blocks going across. And all the way over to the left is programs. That's programs you can get involved in. A lot of people call me about the programs. Every state, every town, many, many towns have programs, and they don't have signs outside. Like, there's no AA signs outside, you know what I'm saying? Or if there's a shelter, you certainly don't have, here's a shelter. No. Well, this doesn't, you know, these programs don't have that either. What they do have is a telephone, you know, number for you to call. They tell you how to get to them. And you know what? You might have a program right in your town where you can go and talk about the abuses that you have, you know, sustained and over the years, the crimes against children. And it's face-to-face. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback, Bill. A lot of good feedback.
Yeah.
I directed a guy just about a week ago, another guy. And I forget where he was from. He wasn't from New Jersey, I don't think. I don't know. But anyway, the point is this. We're here, okay, 365 days a year. 365 days a year we're here, okay. And we have 5 shows a week. So on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, we have our guests come on. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have, you know, psychiatrists, therapists, and police officers, whoever we can get to come on, they come on. So anyway, I just got my 90-second cue, so I'm going to have to wrap up this show. It was a very good show, and I thank Michelle, of course, always for coming on. She's a good friend of mine, and she, too, is a counselor, and Bill's here, and our guest. So, Peter, do come back, okay, when you want, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Bye, Peter. Thanks again. All right.
And
God bless you, Carol. Thank you, Michelle.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah.
Bye.
Good night now.
Good night. Bye.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.